the banks are heavily investing in the space and they're not asleep around this. They need to make sure that they stay on top of it because fraud and scam risk is an ever-evolving arms race, and it's never something that's still and never something that's static.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Vale Mexted, New Zealand Country Manager for FICO, and today we're discussing payment fraud. So Vale, thanks for joining. It's wonderful to have you on the show today. This is a big topic.
Yeah, thanks, Carissa. Really nice to be here and looking forward to talking.
So this is a big topic, and it's something that is popping up in the news left, right, and center. I've actually done a few stories about this angle in particular, so I'm really keen to get into the specifics of that today. So maybe let's sort of set the scene. I want to start with what is a real-time payment for those who are unfamiliar, because I know that, you know, the banking game sort of changing now. I mean, I used to work at a Commonwealth Bank, so I'm familiar with it, but I know that, again, we want to always make sure that we're sort of singing from the same hymn book.
The real-time payment is really what it says on the box. You know, it is any account-to-account funds transfer that allows for the funds to be made immediately available to the recipient. So, you know, putting that in, breaking that down into really simple terms, it means the payer's account immediately, you know, reflects the deduction of the money. The transfer itself is completed, you know, real time or near real time, available immediately for the recipient's account. One of the really important things when we talk about the fraud or the scam side of this is that all of those real time payments are irrevocable. Meaning once a payment is made, the payer cannot deauthorize or, in the old term, dishonor the transfer. And you're right. I mean, it's becoming incredibly topical. The pandemic accelerated the growth of real-time payments and digital payment options as sort of that broader superset. And it's going to continue happening. We, you know, the forecasts at the moment for the market for real-time payments in APAC are for double-digit annual growth for the next 5 years. In Australia, of course, we have the Open Infrastructure for Fast Payments, New Payments Platform, which was touted as one of the world's leading real-time payment platforms that was introduced in 2018. And looking at that today, there's more than 100 banks, building societies, fintechs, you know, government departments using NP to support real-time payments. And that's across consumer payments, business payments, particularly in the small business space. There's a lot of uptake there, government agencies. So, you know, 90 million accounts registered and able to make payments on NPP, processing, you know, 100 million transactions a month. So it's big, it's global, it's happening everywhere, and it's continuing, you know, trajectory is for it to continue to grow.
Okay, so just on the real-time payments, just I want to hold that thought. Now, for example, if I'm transferring funds from ANZ Bank to CBA, in the olden days, it used to be like a 3 business day, sometimes more depending on the bank, but now it's instantaneous, so which is beneficial, but then with that introduces risk. Would you agree?
Oh, look, I think you've summed up what we're probably here to talk about today, Carissa, with that statement. Yeah, that's absolutely it. You know, it's there were, you know, the traditional, you know, ability to dishonor or roll back a payment or not release it to a payee is that's gone with real-time payments. So what in the old days that used to happen, the old days weren't that long ago for this, but you know, what that used to happen was there is that ability to check. And so that ability to check, you know, not just that the funds were there, but also to be able to check that it wasn't a fraudulent transaction, wasn't a money laundering transaction, that it was going to the right account, that the account was who they say they were. That ability or those checks still need to happen, but they need to happen now before the transaction is made.
Okay, so when you say before the transaction is made, what do you mean by that? So we're checking for like bank accounts, names. I think CBA in particular was introducing like, oh, that looks like a foreign bank account. Maybe you're not transferring to someone in Australia, for example.
Yeah, look, it's a number of things, and probably all of those things that you've said there. At its heart, if we look at what we do from a fraud perspective, and we'll extrapolate that through into scams as well, you know, that's certainly a first check is what does this look like, a fraudulent transaction? We've certainly been doing this for a number of decades in terms of checking for fraud, but with real-time payments, that is expanding to be fraud and scams and other sorts of things. And what you're looking there for is that, is this transaction look like the sort of transaction that this individual or this business would make? And some of that can be the frequency of those transactions, it can be the location, it can be the type of transaction. There can also be more blunt type rules that are in there that talk about, is this a new payee? Have we paid to this person before? Or as you mentioned, have we sent to this person who's overseas? And it's about how we want to, I guess, A, assess, or B, have some extra checks before that transaction is released or completed.
So you were saying, okay, so just to press on that a little bit more, just so we get really into this so people know exactly what we're talking about. So for example, if it's like, oh, well, Carissa Breen usually makes these types of payments, but then of course, oh, all of a sudden she's made an unusual payment. But what happens if it is still a fraudulent payment, but it's sort of in line with a regular sort of payment that I would make? So, and I know that, you know, machine learning and AI, we can talk about that to the end of the day, but like all of those things are never going to fully be able to look at each transaction and get 100% of this. But I'm just always curious more around, like, if it was a more sophisticated targeted scam. I don't know, if I was like Bill Gates and I was trying to scam money off him, I would probably be a lot more targeted with how I approach it, perhaps. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, and that's probably the art of the art and this, where the art and the science combine. Ultimately, a lot of fraud that's picked up is quite different. And so you are looking at, I'll probably just distinguish fraud from a scam here. And the definition I'll sort of use for that is fraud that is something that someone is doing to you, versus a scam is where they are getting you to do something yourself unwittingly. You know, a fraud could be where they've managed to get access to your credentials. What typically happens is probably the opposite of what you described, that they will then start to use to do a bunch of high velocity and very different types of transactions to what you would do. If they could get it to look exactly the same, then that would certainly be more difficult to check. And that's where there'll be other controls that are potentially put in place as well. So I think the differences with scams is that they are similarly getting you to do something. So you're actually doing the transaction in all shapes and forms, looks, you know, is a legitimate transaction. So then it's looking at different types of metrics to what you would look at fraud, where it does look the same. And it's looking at other things such as, you know, is it the typical type of transaction you would make, but also, you know, checking for payee. Is this payee right? Is the things I mentioned before about, is this the first time you're paying this individual? Is it not as well? So there's a whole multifaceted set of things that will come in to establish what is that profile is, what is typical, and then where there's a difference.
So you've made a statement here, Val. I'll just read it out, and then I'm keen to sort of get you to elaborate on if that's okay. So authorized push payment fraud is becoming a bigger problem in Australia, I agree, as in other nations where we see a boom in the use of real-time payments. Fraudsters are attracted to these scams as the victims bypass checks by authorizing the payments themselves, with the funds clearing instantly and laundered through a maze of accounts. So maybe talk me through your thinking behind this statement.
Authorized push payment fraud is ultimately where someone is tricked. This is what I was referring to before that I would probably call a scam. And so it's where someone is making the transaction, but they've been tricked into undertaking that transaction. And that ultimately is they're tricked into sending money to someone who's posing as a genuine payee when they're not. So an example, you know, could be where there's a malicious payee, where someone is tricked into purchasing goods, but the goods don't exist or were never received, or where there is payment redirection. And the payment redirection has been getting quite a lot of play in the press as well, where a fraudster is impersonating a legitimate organization or payee, but the funds are then transferred to their bank account as opposed to the legitimate one. And it is growing really fast in Australia and globally. So just so far in 23, according to AEC ScamWatch, you know, false billing scams have been reported 15,000 times. There's $11 million there. Payment redirection scams last year cost Australian businesses $227 million. And that's a 77% increase compared to 2 years ago. And scams overall, Australians lost $3.1 billion. And I think this has brought, probably what's interesting about this is probably brought the focus onto how banks are responding to the issue. And as you mentioned before, the nature of these payments is different in terms of that ability for a bank to intercept. So banks need to take action in real time as it's happening, rather than have that ability to dishonor or disallow them.
Before we get into the bank side of things, I'm just going to go back one more step, because I think it's important to capture this, is going back on, you know, companies out there use AI, machine learning, like we get that. But I'm really focused now on this isn't always going to be accurate. As I sort of mentioned before, like, yes, okay, AI and machine learning can do X amount, but it's not, there's things that are still going to get missed though. And people are still going to get scammed, whether there's monitoring, there's machine learning, there's AI. So maybe tell me more about your thoughts. One thing that probably is frustrating is that, you know, companies come out and say, oh, like, you know, if you use our product, for example, like you 100% won't be hacked or breached or it won't happen, which is fundamentally false. So I'm just always curious to know, like, there will be those anomalies. What's sort of your approach or what's your thoughts around that specifically?
It's a big question to unpack. So there's probably a couple of little phases to that I'll sort of work through in terms of my thinking there. The first is models are simulations or estimates of what they're trying to predict. I think your point about something being 100% able to be captured is a very valid point, and ultimately is where there is a statistical model. So it is attempting to predict the chance of something happening. There is always going to be a probability that something does get through. The idea with these models is that the more sophisticated, the more data you can process, the more sophisticated and ultimately more predictive the models, you're able to get more accurate at understanding what the probability of a particular transaction or payment being a fraudulent payment or being a fraudulent scam transaction is. And I think that's the really important part. And ultimately, it then allows you to balance, an organization to balance what they're trying to balance here, which is, what is the customer experience that someone wants? Does someone want, which everyone does, people want a fully straight through process versus understanding where I need to put some friction into the process, some good friction to manage the risk of that potentially being a fraudulent transaction. And I think this is where then the balances for each organization is, where's the point, where is the right point to put some friction in? And that may be validating with the customer that, as you said before, a transaction is getting paid overseas, sending an SMS or a digital nudge to their app, their banking app, to say, you know, hey, is this transaction coming for you? You know, is this a legitimate transaction or is it not? Versus also then to the point where some may also be, you know, still assessed by manual teams in the background. So it's not a capture everything sort of scenario, but it's the more powerful you can have your analytics to predict, and the more powerful they can predict, then the fewer transactions you're going to miss, and the smaller and the right size the amount of friction you'll need to introduce to manage those that are higher risk.
So on the prediction side of things, that's all big data. So let's look at a bank, for example. We've got millions of people that are customers of a bank and all their transactions. And if we can just use me as a use case for this example. Chris Abreen, we have a transaction history. I know this is fact. I worked in a bank. They're then going to build a profile of what Chris Abreen spends her money on, where she spends it. Is that how the modeling is working?
Yeah, look, that's right. So transactional data is certainly the primary source of data that is used for these models typically. And it's a very powerful information that creates a profile, you know, looking at the velocity of various types of payments or the absence of certain types of payments, and creates that profile. That can then also be augmented by other data that you may hold. You know, you may have information, you know, even just the simple things such as, you know, registering if someone's going on holiday and those sorts of things, then add value over and above those profiles. So, and device information can also be really useful. So that information is there that creates that profile. And ultimately, the way these models work is that in real time, they are taking in this new transaction. They are assessing, is this transaction aligned with what is a correct behavior? And probably not just for you, but also for the behavior of the merchant or the payee or payor that the transaction at either end is like. What's the risk? How different is this? And therefore, what does that present in terms of the risk of it being fraudulent or a scam?
So let's move on now to the banks. Now, there was literally an article I read yesterday. Australian guy, Westpac, I think, was the bank he was banking with. And then I think the scammer actually called the guy up to say, how do you feel that we've stolen your hard-earned savings or something? I mean, it was pretty full on. But this, okay, this is where it gets really interesting. And I don't have any particular side. I'm just here to explore all angles. But, you know, these cases for us, you know, here in Australia specifically, is customers are blaming the banks to say they should have been protecting them more. But the banks are sort of saying, well, you transferred your money to a scammer. Admittedly, maybe you didn't know at the time it was a scammer, you were tricked, etc. But the banks are sort of saying, we're not compensating all of your money back or any part of it. See both sides as a customer. But again, I have worked in a bank and I used to report on the numbers of the bank that would be lost due to credit card skimming, scams, cyber espionage. It's a lot, right? And this is going back a decade ago. So you could imagine now it's even worse. So maybe just unpack where your head's at with this from both sides, if you wouldn't mind.
It's a really fascinating discussion at the moment. It's not just in Australia, we've seen it in New Zealand and a number of other jurisdictions, Singapore as well, where there does seem to be increasing regulator focus on the banks making, I think, more of an effort is probably where the regulators would position it in terms of being able to detect and prevent. And there's two aspects to it. There's the banks to have the types of controls that should be expected for detection and prevention. And then there's also the discussion around the reimbursement, or where does the liability sit if there has been a scam in place or fraud in place. And it's a really tricky one. A lot of the way the regulators seem to be focusing at the moment is that they are wanting to push the liability or reimbursement onto the banks. And I think use that as the trigger to say, well, if you're holding that liability, then banks, you'll be forced to do everything in your power because there's a financial impact to you to increase the detection and prevention of that. And we've seen ASIC have come out and been quite critical of the banks, and the reimbursement level was very low, ranging between 2 and 5% in Australia, and again, similar globally. And I think this comes back to maybe where the balance is between what real-time payments have offered and purported as an incredibly simple and easy process for people to make payments and to remove the friction for it to be fully digital straight through. I think with this emerging discussion around the role or responsibility that banks will need to take, then we're going to see that balance that I mentioned before about where it's right to then introduce friction within the process. And I think that can actually be a really positive thing for the banks as well, because I think we talk about, you know, people want convenience, but people don't want to be the victim of a fraud or a scam. And if they see that the bank is doing what they need to do to look after their customers, then the introduction of that friction, you know, at the expense of that customer experience can actually be a very positive thing and can position that good risk management as a positive. So I think the regulators seem to be positioning themselves that they will continue to put more onus and responsibility on the banks. And I think as a result, the banks will invest, and they have been investing, and they'll continue to invest in the tools to capture these. But we may also see some friction, I think more friction than we necessarily have today, introduced into the process.
So let's start with the consumer. So for this particular case, and I'm seeing a lot of these, as you've alluded to yourself, Vale, even in New Zealand, that, okay, I get a text message. Obviously, it's been spoofed, so it appears it comes from X Bank. So I can understand if people get tricked. I get that. But then it's, you know, people say, oh, our bank's unsafe. We're going to advise you, client, to transfer your entire life savings to another bank. That to me just makes no sense. Now, I'm all about having empathy, but that, if you think about it, that doesn't make sense. What, a bank would never say that. And why would they get you to move your funds to another foreign bank?
Yeah, look, I think an important part, I guess, the controls or exposures, you know, there does need to be education. And ultimately, I think there's a role that everyone has to play. And consumers have personal responsibility as well within that. And I think that's the point you're trying to get to there. There is there is responsible that all of us as digital consumers of financial products need to have, you know, an understanding and look out for these things. I think equally there's a role that big organizations have in helping with that education. So I think there's an important part that's there. There are some little things that are gaps. I think there was a story probably akin to something that you're mentioning there, where a story that I was told around one of the banks where there was a scam transaction went through, and it was actually the receiving bank that identified it, and the control had gone from the sending bank. They hadn't picked it up. The receiving bank had, and then escalated that up to both the consumer and the bank itself. So, you know, there's a role that banks have in protecting themselves from a purely and simple commercial perspective, that a bank doesn't want to have the reputation of being the leaky bank or the fraudulent bank. Now, obviously, the example you had there about then transferring all your funds to an overseas competing bank, that would obviously be, you'd like to hope that doesn't happen as much as maybe it does. But you know, ultimately, I think it's a competitive thing for banks to look at is, you know, can they say, we think back to I always like to think back to the Wild West, that what banks were there for and what they were generally about was keeping your money genuinely safe in those times. And I think there is that role that banks still have to play there within that. It's a really interesting debate as to where this will land. I think as more onus does get put on the banks, then they will put in more friction. They will look at the risk of individual segments of customers, of individual types of transactions, and you may see more risk put in, more friction put in to help manage that risk.
Definitely hear your point. I just want to, this is to me, is this really, it's such a big topic and I just am really passionate about it. I just want to press on this a little bit more. And there's a couple of interesting things that you said there, Vale, which I'm going to get into. But going back on the education piece, now I totally get that. But if you're, I mean, there's this UK banking liability model that they may bring in now, which means that if you get scammed or you willingly got tricked and you sent your money to some foreign bank account, the banks, no matter what, have to reimburse you. But that means we're not really getting to the root cause of educating people, because people are going to know regardless of if they pay attention or are vigilant or not vigilant, they're going to get their money back regardless. So I guess the education side of the thing goes out the window, because who cares by that point, because you're going to get your money back regardless.
At the end of the day, if banks are fully responsible for that liability, then they need to have the controls in place to manage that risk. And that's what we work with the banks to do, is to have those sophisticated controls in place to make the transactions, you know, to assess those transactions before they're released. Now, if we talk about what real-time payments is meant to offer the consumer and the drive for it, again, it's to have this seamless, frictionless journey and to remove some of the, to make things instant and to sort of free up commerce, particularly for small businesses. If that liability goes fully to the banks to manage their balance sheet, to prudently manage themselves as a business, we'll need to probably have a higher level of friction and assessment within that process to be able to help manage that. So ultimately, the consumer experience will suffer. And there'll be segments of individuals that maybe have a higher propensity to be reckless in how they make those payments and set them up. And that will prove be part of, you know, the assessment that they have. I agree. It depends how this goes, but ultimately there's going to be this balance, depending on where liability sits and where responsibility sits, between what's the friction that's going to be in the process versus the straight through nature of it.
So going back to a Wild West analogy about keeping your money genuinely safe, which I agree with, but then my mind goes back to, well, that was the bank's intention, but if you willingly transferred your money, it wasn't, oh, my card got skimmed and, you know, got some money stolen, or cyber espionage and someone willingly stole your money in the account. You willingly transferred it. How was that the bank's fault? That's the part that really gets me about people, and they just blame the bank all of a sudden. Now, I'm not saying should the bank cough up, they've got heaps of money, they make $9 billion in profit a year. Yes, they can afford it, but then it's not really educating the consumer.
Human nature would say that if there is no incentive for someone to change behavior, that they will not change behavior. Now, I suspect the regulator will determine what the level of incentive they put on the banks to manage this situation, which will then drive how the banks will manage the situation, which hopefully will become some middle ground that will allow that education to happen and will result in changes in behavior. But it's not just banks. I mean, these scams are happening, you know, across a variety of industries and a variety of providers. But ultimately, it's going to be about each individual organization based on where the regulator puts their settings to determine, have I got the right tools in place? Have I got the tools to accurately assess the risk of something? And then what's my posture that I want to apply about where I manage that risk versus the customer experience? and what that financial risk of doing so is.
And then you mentioned before the receiving bank, that example you gave, they were the ones that picked up this was fraudulent. So would you sort of envision me more sort of cross-bank like pollination, or because, I mean, that was helpful if the receiving bank acknowledged it was fraudulent. Admittedly, that hasn't always been the case traditionally. Do you see more of that sort of coming into effect though, as we move on with all, like as we move forward with more scams and all these things happening at the moment?
The reputational risk was the main point I was trying to make. But at FICO, with our Falcon Intelligence Network, we actually have real-time fraud models that are run with data that is shared, consortium models that are shared from 9,000 financial institutions globally today. The sharing of information to help build better controls and better protection is already in place, and it's happened. You know, the banks do look to try to, as an industry, solve these problems.
So the operative word that I'm hearing a lot is friction. So what does friction mean from your point of view?
So we've talked a lot about already about the speed of the transaction. The other part is the channels at which a lot of these real-time payments are going through. So there's increased use of digital channels, and so therefore there's potential vulnerability there around cyber threats and compromises, et cetera. But also a lot of the digital pathways may not want to have as robust, so less secure authentication methods. So they'll often be passwords and PINs sort of to verify the identity at either end. So the friction is going to come in a number of different ways. So one is when setting up payers and payees, those things, are, you know, how they are identified and how they are authenticated. And then there is the transaction itself. Actually, I've got just unpacking that back. Yeah, in Australia, under the new payment platform, you know, that there is a concept under there called PayID, which is a unique identifier, you know, for the account holder, which is gaining some momentum. But that's one of those mechanisms in place where friction has been added to create and help authenticate the payers and the payees there. So there's some things that are going on already in that space, but ultimately they're adding friction. And then the other way is when the transaction is happening. And that may be in the form of authentication, like messages, whether it's an SMS or a digital nudge or something like that's coming out through a mobile app. Something that says, hey, this transaction is taking place. You know, is this a legitimate transaction? At the far end of it, it is where you may say, this is such a high risk of a transaction that I'm not going to let it go through and I'm going to block it and I'm going to get it investigated by an internal sort of fraud team. So they're the sorts of layers, different layers of friction. And there's in the transaction itself, and then there's the verification of the payer as well. And I think there's a big thing that the regulators have called out and the payers around the banks is actually doing, knowing that if payment is meant to be going through to X and they already know that X's bank account number is ABC, then, you know, do they reconcile? So there's some really probably simple things that can be done about reconciling bank accounts, receiving bank accounts against sort of known bank accounts of bigger corporations.
So reconciliation on if you're paying the ATO, for example, it would acknowledge like this is a verified ATO account. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so quick question then. On the real-time payment side of things, you say I'm paying you, and then is there a way, I know that it's instantaneous, but is there a way that it can go into sort of like escrow or like it quarantines the payment until it's acknowledged it's not fraudulent? Would that reduce some of the issues that we're seeing in the market at the moment? And I know that that's not like the most easiest question to answer. I'm just trying to think more about how to give that just to slow it down just for a moment, and then they can release the payment.
So you want to introduce near real-time payments, Carissa?
Potentially, yes.
What we're saying there is some sort of a middle ground almost between what we've got today and what we had, where there is that increased gap of time. It's not somewhere I have knowledge as to whether there's sort of that ability or those conversations, not to my understanding. But I think it just puts that onus back on. At the end of the day, it's the bank who is making the payment to do everything they can, so utilize the tools that they have and, you know, to be able to make that assessment before it is sent and, if necessary, not process that transaction. So I think that's where the onus needs to be with real-time transactions, is to do everything you can and with sophistication available to you up front before that transaction happens.
So I know that you mentioned that banks that, or people who support financial institutions with cybersecurity services, need to adapt financial crime detection systems to keep up with changing payments landscape, as we've discussed at length today. as well as consumer expectations, which is I want everything right now. There's a lot going on here. There's sort of like there are different ends of the spectrum. We want to make things secure, but I really want something right now. And as we've spoken about today, you can't sort of have it all the one sort of time. So maybe how do you get that equilibrium then? And I know, again, it's about having all the right answers. It's more so just having a discussion from people like yourself to share your insights and your thoughts.
We have this demand. People actually want to see, first and foremost, a bank keeping them protected and secure. But there can sometimes be a drive to, you know, for a bank to be a Google. I think, and to have maybe, you know, seamless customer experiences. And I think the truth or the right answer sits somewhere in between, that ultimately a bank can't get in the way of this progress. And the banks are investing, don't get me wrong. The banks are heavily investing in this space and they're not asleep around this. It's they need to make sure that they stay on top of it, because fraud and scam risk is an ever evolving arms race, and it's never something that's still and never something that's static. And I'd argue that the customer experience balance is also just the same arms race at the moment. I keep thinking back to, you know, probably only even 5 or 10 years ago, maybe, that when, you know, we had contactless payment for cards that came out. Now I get frustrated if I ever have to enter a PIN into a terminal with that extra, you know, 3 seconds of my life that's been taken away from me. You know, there's a changing dynamic around what people expect. I think the key thing, and it's not just about managing fraud, AML, cyber, it's actually about how you manage a customer as a whole, is that what customers want is they want, I don't think customers mind friction if it's the right friction and it's done for a good reason. So it needs to add value. And I think adding value, which is I'm keeping you safe and I'm doing it for a reason that's obvious. You know, they look, if a customer's looking at that transaction and saying, I can see why they asked me that question. You know, I've just gone away on holiday and I didn't tell them I was going overseas. So yes, I can understand why that question has been asked, why I've received that SMS. But it's also something broader about how organizations in today's digital world need to manage effectively a digital conversation with their customers that builds up trust. And a big part of these, the fraud, cyber, scam space, is how you build up trust. And it's how you also need to then have consistent messaging, consistent approaches, not just about that part of your business, but your marketing, your customer assistance. All of those parts of your business needs to know, and you need to be able to do something that's personalized, real, and is adding value to the customer. And then they don't mind the friction.
When I was in America, a lot of places didn't take Apple Pay. And so like, or Pay ID or anything, it was just a physical card I had to get at each time. And that was like an extra second of my life, which still infuriated me as a customer. Just maybe to conclude our interview today, Vale, is consumer expectations. Are people just like people, like I said, everyone wants everything now. Back in the day, it was a 3-day delay or more, depending on what bank it was from. And now it's instantaneous, which I get from a customer experience, but then you also potentially compromise, like you said, on the security side of things or fraud. But are people just getting like their expectations are just out of this world now?
It's a tough one to answer. I think there are massive benefits from real-time payments. I think the space that gets a lot out of it is small businesses, where the ability to receive payments in real time, as opposed to having to wait 2 or 3 days and having also a risk of goods having been gone out the door and then something being dishonored. That is a massive game changer for small businesses. And as is the ability for digital businesses to utilize this. So I think there's an overwhelming good out of this. And the convenience is fantastic. But I think there's a middle ground, because there is a risk of fraud and scams, and it's increasing rapidly. And we're probably going to find a middle ground. But I also think organizations think that people are afraid of more friction than they really are. I know we sort of talked about the 1 second versus the 2 seconds. But again, if the friction's done for a right reason, that you're doing it for using sophisticated tools, so you're only doing it when you have to, as opposed to just very bluntly for any type of transaction that's overseas, for example, then people are okay with that. Because at the end of the day, no one, even if you're fully reimbursed, going through a fraud or a scam experience is still a negative and painful thing that you don't want to go through and is best to be avoided.
Yes, I know. Us consumers who are just, the banks are doing all these things to make our lives better. But again, there's that balancing act. So Vale, is there anything specific you want to leave our audience with today?
Look, I think the key thing is, and we've touched on two or three different areas today, that it's an evolving space. It's changing at a rapid pace. Payment methods are changing at a rapid pace. And fraud has always changed as a rapid pace and always will do. I think it's really important, not just for this problem, but for how organizations interact with customers in this digital world, that they use all the sophisticated tools they have available, that focus on bringing a consistent approach, that use all of the information about a customer to give that customer a better and personalized experience. And I think that's how you solve many problems in a bank and provide a great experience across many facets of an organization.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by Mercsec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit mercsec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.